Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I've been to a few races, but this was possibly the most surreal thing I have ever been 5 yards away from.
If there's any mistakes, the consequences are dire.
This is what the motor car is for the majority of the world now.
Hello and welcome to the Collecting Addicts podcast, episode number 55. My fellow addicts point out that's Carlos Sainz's race number. He had a very, very impressive podium at the weekend. So let's start by talking about the Formula One. Manish and I were lucky enough to be there. So I'll hand over to him because he probably knows more about the race than I did.
I feel most of the action was off track, to be perfectly honest.
Yes.
How many overtaking maneuvers did anyone count? Any of those based on real overtaking? Lewis had a broken seat afterwards, I believe. Leclerc had a problem with, I think Ferrari said that their brake ducts were a bit too small.
And he asymmetric.
They said that they certainly didn't mount asymmetric brake ducts, but he had a problem with the left front. It was heating up. And so he had to do various things like diving out of slipstreams and things to cool it down. But I have to say, moment of the weekend for me is I was having a lovely chat with Luca Colliani, who used to be Ferrari's communications person under Luca Montezemolo, and he now works for Pirelli. And we were sitting, you know, talking about the old times and how much better it was in those old days, all that stuff that Neil tries so hard to stop us doing, but we couldn't help it, Neil. And suddenly, the pit lane was as if a thousand hornets had descended upon a spot that was moving. And what we realized was two people were walking the entire length of the paddock, surrounded by every single camera, iPhone, news reporter, you can name it. And basically, which is quite surreal, Luca and I. And we just saw right there, they just walked past at this glacial pace. It was Jerry Halliwell with a face thus set. It's about 30-degree incline of her jaw. And Mr. Horner, absolutely looking fixed ahead of him. They were about a metre apart, and they were moving at about a metre a second. And they just, literally walked past us, stopped at Red Bull, and I thought they were going to leg it in, but they very, very gracefully climbed the 4 steps of the Red Bull terrace and stood there, chatting amiably for the cameras for about 20 minutes. And I've been to a few races, but this was possibly the most surreal thing I have ever been 5 yards away from. And it was really, really difficult to concentrate after that, I have to tell you. I mean, this story was, it was like the foam that envelops an aeroplane when it makes a crash landing. You don't see the tail, you don't see the engines, you just see the foam. And it is foam, in my opinion. It's all foam and froth. But it absolutely nuked. Good 3 hours of Saturday, as far as I was concerned.
So here's a question for everyone. When what's happening off the track, not only on the Netflix documentary, but in real life, is more interesting than what's going on the track, does that mean Formula One is in trouble? Or does that mean Formula One's in a good place? Answer that, whoever wants to.
Well, maybe just for a short while. There was some good stuff happening on track. The chap I want to swap jobs with, racing driver Rob, was, you can't see it, he was driving Lewis's McLaren F1 2008 championship winning car.
But not in the race.
That not in the race, no.
Sadly. Exhibition event.
Yeah. That was pretty exciting. It's not going to be forever, is it? It's not going to be forever. Mercedes were a bit hobbled by their brake ducts. Lewis had a broken seat. That sounds a bit elementary, doesn't it? You think they'd have worked out seats aren't a new thing.
He said
so I'm eternally optimistic about it.
Chris, he said his left butt cheek was hanging over the seat. It cracked.
That's an image I didn't hitherto have in my mind. Hard to rid it now. So no, I think at Jeddah, I'm optimistic. I think Jeddah's a different kind of track. We'll see. I've read somewhere that Toto Wolff is reported as saying, well, the championships are already over. That's a bit pessimistic.
Well, knew they would probably be over because the regs aren't changing and there's a very fast guy and a very fast car. Yeah. So we probably know the result there.
This Red Bull is quite a different design to the last car. In fairness, it's not like he's gone super conservative. It's quite aggressive. I'm pinching myself slightly because I've never had track access like I had at the weekend. I spent most of FP2 and the race just being driven around the infield in a little buggy with some pals, and I was about a yard away from the cars. Now I'm not Mark Hughes. I can't stand there and tell you exactly what's going to happen with the car just by looking at its stance, but I've watched a few racing cars and I hate to say it, I fear Toto is right. If you go and stand up close and watch the way that Verstappen car goes through high speed, medium speed and low speed corners, I wouldn't want to be the opposition. I mean, the high speed, it's absurd. And we watched the start down at T1. So we were sort of behind the crash, the sort of crash fences on T1. So we were 50 yards from that first corner, just with some mates. And one of whom might have the surname Franchitti and know an awful lot about racing cars. By lap three, so before the DRS was active, Max was fuel saving, which is pretty staggering, really. And these cars have, they sound like they've got a misfire, but they have the moment they're off the gas, they have a cylinder cut. And when you're up close, you hear it a lot more than on the telly. So Max's advantage, you know, that 20 whatever seconds he won by from his teammate could easily have been a minute.
Yeah.
And I think it's a bit of a problem, really. Do you need to just give him the championship and make sure that everyone has a squabble behind? But it's not a great start for the season. I love, as a race meeting, I know it sounds bizarre. If you go and watch one race next year, get on a plane, go and have a few days in the sun and go and watch it. It's only 3 hours time difference. It's a mega experience. Because unlike Silverstone, you get great access and you can mill about. You know, there's so few people there relative to European race. It feels quite intimate.
And it's 20 years that they've been...
Yeah.
Sorry, saying that it's been 20 years that they've been doing it. So they've refined it. It's an experience.
If I was going to put my money on the outcome this year, I'd say a Red Bull will win every race apart from Monaco. That's what I would say. I think the advantage is extraordinary. And the Horner thing is what it is. You know, it's a good bit of spice. Like you, I find myself, you know, it's the only time I've actually watched I look at the Daily Mail website because, like all of us, I've got this ghoulish interest in what's going on because it's so ridiculous. And now it's all come out, you know, was Jos interested in this lady? And
I've spent a lot of time with her.
Yes.
Yeah. According to the Times, they're close friends, according to the Times.
The preposition, I thought you spent a lot of time in her. but I think... Once you break through all the froth and foam, as Manish says, it's a bit, you know, I just wish we had a bit more bloody racing, frankly.
I think the funny thing is when you watch it on telly, Ferrari won.
Yeah.
There wasn't. There's literally no TV at all on the Red Bulls. It was whether Red Bull said, "Oh, please, you know, calm us down a bit. We don't want to show off this weekend," or someone said, "Can we actually just show some like racing with more than one car in the shot?" So I was shocked because when they did the podium at the end, the bloke in the red was third.
He didn't win.
There were these other two blokes dressed in blue. I'd not seen them for the whole race. It was
There was some quite good racing on. Weck was in Qatar, not a million miles away.
Weck was good.
Peugeot had
that
a bit of a laugh.
Poor Peugeot.
Oh, bloody hell. I mean, that was gutting. I've got a new test about whether motor racing is exciting. So Cameron and his girlfriend Cara have got two kittens, rescue kittens. They're absolutely lovely. One of them's called Domino because it was left in a box outside a takeaway pizza establishment. So Domino and Kaluki, it's a card game, I think. They were watching the WEC on Saturday, they went up to television and raced past television, tried pawing at the television. When the F1 was on, they just went to sleep. That's the test.
Cameron and his girlfriend or the kittens?
Probably yes. Both, actually.
It's a good thing their names aren't Liberty and Media.
I'll
tell you what I did do there. Oh, God, I feel lucky the weekend I had. I went to turn 12 during FP2.
Is that the fast right-hander?
Nothing fast right-hander. Left goes up the hill, goes right. And we just stood there and watched. And the first 10 minutes, they were on low fuel. It's the only time they ran low fuel with a sticky tyre. And we whinge, you know, you can talk about the old days and the cars look so big compared to what, you know, all the bullshit through the rose-tinted spectacles. But a Formula One car working at high speed is a mighty thing to observe. Mm. And the drivers deserve hero status, just hanging on to these bloody things. If there's any mistakes, the consequences are dire. And I love being reminded of the gladiatorial side and these drivers are heroes. Speaking of which, the most interesting part of the race for me was Tsunoda and Ricciardo having handbag afterwards. Discuss.
Yeah, Dan Ticktum. Taught them all he knows. Dan Ticktum, or Dick Tantrum, as he's known in the sport. That was extraordinary, wasn't it? Normally quite angry chap from Japan. Oh. Now he's not got those oversized clothes from AlphaTauri to wear. He's even more angry. And had a go at biffing Ricardo on the slowing down lap.
That was almost come and have a chat with the steward's job, that was. You know, he aimed his vehicle at his teammates.
Yeah. I'm sort of surprised it didn't.
You've got to be pleased with Carlos.
Yeah. I think, let's hope that there's a bit more of a race in Jeddah, which actually, even though it's a sort of semi-temporary circuit, is a high-speed festival, isn't it? It has those long sweepers that are hugely testing. So let's
move on. Can I just ask something? Does anybody think that just after one race, Ferrari made the wrong decision about the driver they want to drop?
I think they might have done before. I think Carlos last year was more impressive. I'm a big Charles fan, but I think Carlos...
I just like Carlos's hair.
He's got good hair.
He's got magic hair.
Yeah.
He also...
He's so bright as well. You know, he's really just the way he drove last year to that victory versus that moment where Charles just miscalculated, even with the engine. You just wonder whether they have made a mistake here, because he's a beautiful thing to watch in a car.
Yeah, he's a lovely... I'm thinking about the hair, because for four of us, it's going to be slightly, maybe three and a half of us, slightly more challenging. But Manish, I reckon you could rock Carlos's hair. Why don't you could... No, I'm not mucking... I think you could grow it a bit.
Just don't get it cut this year.
Exactly. Don't get it cut this year and just see how many drives you get offered.
Can we finish this? It's not fair. Come on, man.
I saw a photo of you, Chris, the other day with Carlos's wig on it, or looked like Carlos's wig.
That's a forthcoming film. You're going to enjoy that one. I go retro. So if I was Carlos Sainz, the one thing I would do is I'd walk up to Max Verstappen on the podium and go, "You may be a fast driver, but my dad is much cooler than your dad." King Carlos walking around that paddock is one of the coolest figures. There were some really cool people from the past and the present there, but the two that make me go, Well, there's three that make me go wobbly than these. One is Damon Hill, because he's just the world's nicest man. Everything you might think he is and more. The other one is King Carlos. He's just a dude. When you see him, he's just a dude. And number one, by a mile for me, because I've always been a tragic, is Mika Häkkinen, who just, you just, every time you see him, you think of that move at Spa and just how fast he was. I think he's glorious.
Can I add a fourth to that then? Just before we, I actually got to spend some proper time with Gerhard Berger over the weekend. And he was obviously, you know, wasn't quite my idol, as in, you know, he was Senna's teammate. But the man did drive for Benetton Ferrari, McLaren Ferrari Benetton. I mean, that was the perfectly symmetrical career. I think he was at Arrows before that, wasn't he? And he really rivals, in my opinion, Damon for cool. And for a guy with no airs and graces, yes, the man has won 10 Grand Prix with Senna's teammate and just knows everything about everyone. Boy, can he tell a story.
I bet.
And be fun to hang out with. I mean, he really, magical man. Magical.
And they found his Ferrari, didn't they, after 28 years?
The 512 Ti. Yes,
the 512 Ti.
I saw that, yeah.
With special seats. Have you seen the interior shot?
Wasn't it an M with the covered lights?
No, you're right. Yes.
Covered lights.
It was covered lights.
But very special seats if you Google it.
Yeah, is that a weird library shot? It's also got some aftermarket Momo steering wheel on it. Yeah. With those red seats.
Yeah, looks really good.
Okay, right, let's move on. This is a statement that we will discuss. The Tesla Model Y was the best-selling car in the world in 2023. According to the interweb, the Tesla sold 267,200 of them.
No, 1.3 million.
Okay,
I think that's a quarter.
Oh, per quarter, you're right.
Four times 230. Sorry, 1.3. Okay, so there we go. How could it be the best selling car? They sell more F-150s than that in a month in America, don't they? What do you think? Ed would love it. What do you think? Do you care? Does it matter? Clearly it matters, but what do you think?
This is progress, isn't it? And I jotted some names down of Chinese electric car companies. We've all heard now of BYD, which I think was the largest manufacturer of electric cars in China. And then there's Lincoln Co., Brilliance, JAC Motors, Zotye, GAC, Great Wall Motors, Suist, NIO, and that's just to name a handful of them. You know, this is what the motor car is for the majority of the world now. I grew up reading Autocar, looking at car of the year being a BMW 3 Series or a Ford Mondeo. Not anymore. And none of the names, none of the incumbents of the 1990s, 2000s, 2010s are even there now.
It feels like a watershed moment, and there are rumours that European governments are going to start trying to apply tariffs to make it easier for European car companies to compete. That's another complication. Neil, what do you think?
Well, this was my little thing, wasn't it? Because I was reading it in Autocar. I suppose we can't get too annoyed with it, because you have to admire Elon Musk as a bit of a genius, really, don't you? Yeah. I know, sort of reduce the price to go for market share, and he's probably selling them at a loss like the Chinese are a little bit, to be honest. But you have to admire the guy, because he's probably got, you know, four brains in his head, isn't he? I mean, he's really super clever. And I suppose, I'm sure, like the 1960s, if we were the sort of beardy people sat talking around 356s or Ferraris, the Ford Popular or whatever, Anglia, was the best-selling car. It's a bit like the Apple Watch is the best-selling watch. You know, I suppose there's a job to be done of transportation with cars, which is 95% of, you know, what people buy cars for, like washing machines or dishwashers. And the Tesla, what's it called?
Model Y.
Yeah. I mean, as I've previously stated, I would rather walk. But I suppose he's a clever sod, so good on him, really. He knocked Toyota Corolla off the perch.
RAV4 Corolla.
I just think it's incredible that none of the old guard are even there anywhere to compete. There was a sort of famous quote from, is it Steve Ballmer, Microsoft, one of the original guys. It was like the iPhone will never work because you just can't do it. Email on it, it's got no buttons. You know that they took, you know, this is the software people taking it to the car companies.
I mean, the reason why, does anyone know why it was called the Y? This might be an urban myth.
Why is that,
because,
Chris?
Well, I'm so kind of you to ask, Edward. Well, what I've understood is that he had the Model S, which he started, then he had the Model 3. And then he had the Model X. So if he had a Model Y, it would be sexy. And he thought that was funny.
It was sexy.
He thought it would be funny.
You can say it.
He also missed out. He couldn't call it the Model T, could he?
No, because no one would ever do that. No one would ever do that. We don't know anyone who might do that.
No.
There is a difference, though, between... You're right. I think Musk is very... There's a big difference, though, between Musk and any other car... supremo leader. He's not actually in the car business. He's in the saving the planet business. He's a true believer. He honestly thinks mankind, if you can talk about people kind, is self-destructive. And that's why he's in his Mars stuff. He seriously believes it's his purpose in life to save us from ourselves. So that's why I thought transport mobility is a big part of it. He's not per se in the car business.
He doesn't really believe that. It's bullshit.
If you read your stuff, I did something last year looking at, I looked at how did he go about cracking space and lifting stuff from the surface into, and he, one of the things that he spotted was the key number was if your fourth attempt at shooting a rocket goes off, you never recover.
Right.
Fourth one's got to work. And I read a bit about how he got to where he was. And the reason why he's doing that is part of this, you know, he's clearly not normal. He's got something extraordinary about him.
Yeah.
He clearly does believe. That's why the whole Mars thing and getting it people into Mars.
I've read that.
And democratizing, if we think what he's done in the car industry is amazing. He's made NASA and the US space industrial complex look unbelievably old-fashioned expensive by how quickly and cheaply that stuff goes up. And when they come back down and land and they make that supersonic boom and they come down, how cool is that?
Thunderbirds.
Amazing. Thunderbirds, isn't it?
No way it's real. It can't be real.
Yeah, right. You're absolutely right.
You sell 1.2 million of these cars in a year. That's 1.2 million giant iPads taken out of circulation, because those things, they aren't just drive by iPad. I find them as cars really unaesthetic. You know, I don't know whether it's a car or an SUV. It sits between the two. I don't know if you've ever remember the film Sleeper with Woody Allen, right at the beginning, how these kind of silent, that's what they look like to me.
Yeah.
They look like a mock-up from 1973 of what a car, you know, in 2000 would look like. It's just something... Yeah.
I think that's the remarkable thing, because, you know, BMW, Mercedes, the ultimate driving machine, it's about making something that questionably looks beautiful and drives perfectly and has the best engine. And, you know, and Tesla have proven you can come in and take huge market share from people that just want a mode of transport.
There's a brilliant...
The other thing I find quite incredible about this whole electric car movement is the consumer seems... incredibly forgiving. They don't seem to care about, you know, everything we cared about, or Chris, you know, you wrote about back in the day. They don't seem to care about the road test reports, etc. Does it turn on? Are the electronics and the functionality do what they want it to do? I.e., when you change to a new iPhone or whatever, it just works, and your emails are there, and etc. They're just so forgiving that build quality of the new truck, they just sort of laugh at. They still want one and still order one, but they just sort of laugh at it. It's, you know, I'm an early adopter. It's a badge of honor.
I think the Apple thing is interesting. Cameron wrote to me this afternoon and he said, Tesla is the Apple of progressive motorists.
Yeah,
and the Model Y is the watch. Everyone has one, despite many more discerning customers believing it to be a bit shite.
Yeah.
I think there is something in that.
Yeah.
I think
there's a brilliant article in last week's Autocar by the CEO of Renault, and they asked him to pen, you know, a big piece about the dilemma that the European car industry is in. And it's probably on their website. I was just having a look, but I can't find it. But it's a really good article, and it really slams into the European Union about, you know, all these rules, all the protectionism.
And the
costs, and how, if they're not careful, European automotive industry is going to implode on itself.
Yeah,
it's a very, very well written.
Yeah.
The irony of the Eurocrats and the protectionism is that I think the way that they've legislated around electric cars and what's happened with China's strength is that, and this is deeply ironic, if they want the European car industry to survive, they're going to have to get rid of the ban on ICE, because the only way these car makers are going to be able to compete is to keep selling internal combustion engines, because they've already lost the electric game. They're so far behind the curve.
Yeah,
and I think I admire Tesla. I really do. I one of the great paradoxes of our time is I would have thought that Elon Musk would be the doyen of Gen Z, but so many of them hate him. I find that really weird.
Well, it's his politics, though, isn't it? That's why they hate him.
He's the richest bloke in the world,
and that's
the second richest bloke in the world today. Bezos overtook him again.
Oh, did he?
He did.
Well, and also, in reality, are any of them the richest folks in the world? If you go to the Middle East for a bit, there are people there. You just don't know how much money they've got. But they're much richer than all of these buggers. So I think Tesla is fascinating, because it once again confirms that at some point, an industry opens itself up to disruption. And when it is disrupted, it is for a reason. It's because the industry became lazy. It's didn't embrace new technology, or a new technology came along that meant that, and actually, you know, as collecting cars, we've seen this. You can come along and disrupt if you start from a clean sheet of paper, but if you've got an existing business and you have to cannibalize your own business,
it's very hard to give it up.
Technology, I defy any management team to do that. I mean, if you're BMW, the idea of saying, well, we're not going to make the cars that make us money, we're going to make cars that make no money because that's what we think we should be doing.
Yeah.
Well, what a strange place to be. But very few businesses or industries have to deal with this at the moment. And I have a large amount of sympathy for the European car industry. And I hope there are ways that it can protect itself or be protected by governments. But I fear it's too late. And Tesla is remarkable. It's almost like it's not a car company.
Exactly, that's my point.
I hear people talking about, should I buy an electric car or a Tesla? It's like they don't... It's like, no, they're the same thing. Many people don't view them as that. The Teslas almost stand alone.
This will be an ongoing conversation for a long time, Chris. But when you say it's too late, in your head, what do you mean when you make that statement?
I think the technology advantage and the price point at which Chinese car companies can sell these things means that they might be very difficult to compete with. I mean, the European car companies can get the tech, they can get it all going, they can make it work, but it arrives at a price point that most people cannot fathom.
We
know, and in the news at the moment, there's a lot of news about these massive container ships that are arriving in European ports, just rammed full of electric cars, some of them from the companies you've listed. And they will be for sale online or probably in supermarket, you know, areas, brand retail places for 30 grand.
And
when someone's going to buy their family car, are they thinking, I'm not sure about the geopolitical situation of where that was made, and I'm not sure I want to strengthen China? They just see a car that's half as much money as a Volkswagen and just as good.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. What it must lead to is some form of consolidation at the top end in the luxury space, because that there's always going to be the discerning consumer that wants the Rolls Royce or whatever, and I don't think the Rolls Royce buyers all of a sudden going to just accept that actually the Tesla's better value. Certain people will, and there will also be some, you know, political correctness in what you should be driving.
There's one point that goes on from that, though, Edward, because when I was reading about this, and one little thing that none of us have pointed out is that in the developing world, there is no battery charging network. So this is actually a conversation that we really have to have about Europe at the moment and about North America at the moment. I don't know what China's charging infrastructure is. Chris Cooper probably has a handle on that.
Must be quite good, mustn't it?
Yeah. It's very good, but the irony is it's fired or it's powered by coal-fired power.
Oh, of course, yeah. But they're not doing it, obviously, to be green necessarily. But I just thought it was really, really interesting that this is not a conversation for Africa yet. It's not a conversation for India, Southeast Asia. This is very much a kind of European plus or minus Chinese conversation. And where you're talking about the little hole in the market, you know, the idea that the ICE might ironically save Europe or keep the European car companies going, that might well be, these are colonial patches for them, although China's obviously changing the dynamic of that right now. But it is a very Western thing right now, and it is 1.2 million, not 12 million a year.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
Okay, so lighter-hearted subject. 2024 events, motoring events, that we would like to go to, that we thought we should go to, things that we've not ticked off. Neil Clifford, you are easily the best events member of the Addicts team because you're always doing something. You're always supporting people. You are a motoring philanthropist. Tell us what you're going to do this year.
It's actually a pretty bloody similar to the fact that this podcast is a year old is a bit scary, isn't it? Because I'm saying the same shit as I said last year.
Good shit, though.
Good shit.
Great shit.
Yeah.
Great.
And we've got, what have we got? We've got members meeting Goodwood in April.
Yeah.
Which is a lovely 2-day Saturday, Sunday mega fest of not just 60s cars, but 70s cars, 80s cars. Wonderful. Should go to that. The Tour Auto, which I always go to Paris and watch the start. I think that's May or June, isn't it? It's on my bucket list, which we're going to talk about that a little bit later. The Targa Florio, I'm going to go to again. Actually, there's two I found out. There's one in May, and then which is a different type of Targa Florio to the one in October. And I've got a mate who's racing at this incredible, funded by the mafia, Formula One circuit called ENA. Right,
ENA Pagusa.
Yeah, and I think it held a couple of Formula One races in the 60s, Graham Hill and all that lot. And I went there last year to watch a demo with my mates. And there's an actual proper classic F1 race there this year. So I'm going to go to that. So I bookended the Targa Florio on one weekend, and then I'm staying there in Sicily, and I'm going to the ENA thing and then the next weekend. And then we've obviously got Goodwood. We've obviously got all of our wonderful oily fingernailed events like Shelsey Walsh and COP and all of that. And I'll try and fit as many of those as I possibly can. And then we've got Revival in September. So there's a lot to do, actually. And I'm going to try to do as many of it as bloody possible because they're just great.
Sounds fantastic.
Yes. And we should all do it.
We should.
We should.
Ed would love it. What are you going to do?
Well,
what would you like to do?
We've got our Collecting Cars World Worldwide Coffee Run on the 18th of May. So make sure you've got that jotted down. If you're in Australia, it will be the 19th of May because Australia, apparently the kids all play sport on Saturdays. So you won't get anyone away from the sports pitches on a Saturday. I'd love to do Bonneville Speed Week.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's something I, you know, whether I can actually do it, and I think it's August, isn't it?
When it starts raining.
I did Octane landed on my desk this week, and if you want to see what events are happening this summer, go by this month's Octane, and it's got three pages of all the events in there. What's quite incredible is when you get into August and September, how many events are competing for each other, how many concourses there are around the world competing for each other during those months is quite remarkable. One I did spot, which is on the 2nd to the 4th of August, is Classic Days in Dusseldorf, where they got 4,000 classic cars turning up. So for anyone in Europe or the UK, that's a very easy dash in a car or a plane over to Dusseldorf to go and gawp on some amazing German classics.
Yeah.
And then the other one, which is quite late in September, is the Bridge in the Hamptons. It's at a golf club about an hour and 45 minutes outside of Manhattan. And that's become quite a cool concourse. And I've got to say, I'm going to name a competitor here, but RM Sotheby's did the Miami concourse this weekend in partnership with We Are Curated in Miami. They did a bloody good job down there, and I love that. You know, this whole space kind of needs changing up, doesn't it? And the San Moritz on Ice, I appreciate it didn't really happen, but you know, to have a gathering of amazing cars in a kind of different place for a different audience is kind of fun. So
it's kind of cool, yeah.
Yeah, it is. There we go. There's a little dump of idea.
Chris Cooper.
The two that I thought sounded slightly odd, and then I realised what the boys are on about. They said Alton Park British Touring Car Round and the Donington Park British GT Round are must-go-tos. And I realised because that's where they're racing at this summer. So go along and see them. Both of them will be on telly as well, so do go along and support them. All the Collecting Cars events, because they're just mega. I've got a couple of others as well. If you haven't been to Santa Pod, and we need experienced to a top fuel dragster, you just haven't lived. It's not just because of the noise and the nature of the noise. It just beats the atmosphere, and it's amazing. So the European finals are usually in September. It's an amazing venue. It's the most prolific motorsport venue in the UK. They're doing something every weekend. It goes from literally little toddlers and little itty-bitty little dragsters to what are mostly female-piloted Scandinavian top-fuel dragsters. There's only about four or five of them running. Jesus Christ, 11,000, 12,000 horsepower. It rips the atmosphere. In motorsport, there's nothing like it. The other thing, Riyadh. I know it's not cars, but for people like us, it's just Woodstock, the Royal International Air to Two at Fairford.
I've done that. Yeah,
just, boys and I are going to go this summer. It is mega. The last thing is, I've got to just show with my little Motorsport UK badge on, everyone can get involved in a motorsport event. It's called Street Car. Go to the Motorsport UK website and look at Street Car. You can do it in your own car. Don't need a helmet. It's a free license. You can apply online and get it online. Don't need a roll cage. Don't need any modifications. It's a little speedy type event. Some of them done off-road is mega fun. I think the Oxford and District Motor Club did one last year off-road. So if you ever thought this is the year, I don't want to just go and watch. I want to say I've done a motorsport event, Street Car. Go to the Motorsport UK website, have a look at it. It'd be brilliant.
Nice.
There you go. Get involved. Manish.
I mean, definitely good with Goodwood, but I would actually really like to go to the Belgian Grand Prix this year. I don't mind if it's a high speed pursuit. I really don't, with no overtaking. I just think it's been many years since I've been at the bottom of Eau Rouge, just looking up. And I really fancy doing that. I think something about Bahrain's whet my appetite about that, because I think you're right, Chris. If you ignore the racing and just look at them as pieces of machinery that go very, very quickly stuck to the ground, I think I'd really like to see that. I think that's going to be amazing. And the other event, I was having a chat with the new CEO of Bewley, and there is an absolute must-go event that we've got to do, which is he's invited us to come and do a pod there live. And I think
we should do that. Yeah, Bewley's great.
It's going to be great. He's just said, come, you're very welcome. And we can set up our little tent and make that absolute.
They do some amazing auto jumbles, don't they, at Bewley?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Our good friend Robert Denton is local to Bewley.
Is he? Yeah. Brilliant.
He lives in Bournemouth. He can come and be the special guest at our podcast.
He can serve jelly and ice cream to everyone. Jelly and ice cream.
Well, he knows more about cards than all of us added together.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. That'd be great.
Yeah, yes, we should do that.
Yeah.
So my all great things there. I'll add, I'm going back to the TT because I loved it so much last year. So I'm going back with Team McGuinness again this year, and I'm taking a couple. We're going over on bikes. We're all going on Hondas, so we're going to take. Someone's got it's a CB1000. My friend James Walker's got. I've got an old SP1 that we're going to dust down and take over because that was a bike that John actually raced on. And I think we're going to get one of these new CBR600s. Honda just bought out a new 600, which has been launched next week in Europe. So I think either I will end up purchasing one or we'll buy one between us. And we'll all swap bikes and go there. That is the best spectator event I've ever been to. And as long as it exists, I think I'll go every year. I've written here, I'm going to go to a local track day. I sometimes fear that the lesser circuits aren't getting the numbers that they should be getting. So I think we should all look at going to look up your local track, go there, go to an evening track day, you know, treat yourself, put some shit old tires on the car, go there, have a chat to people and tear it up. It's a good thing to do. I want to do a gravel rally in my Escort. I want to do a single venue rally in my Escort as well. Single venue rallying might be the future of the sport in the UK.
What is that?
That's when you effectively go to Brands Hatch, for example, and they run different stages that go different ways around the circuit. Then stage four, you're suddenly going flat out through the car park, or they're very inventive and they're really good events. And they just, you know, they run through car parks and up the straight the wrong way. You go into the trees. It's mad. It's accurate, but it's a way of doing skids without upsetting the Forestry Commission,
which is expensive these days.
Yeah, I know. So I want to do one of those. And actually, the one that I'm really looking forward to is that beautiful Darren from Destination Nürburgring has managed to squeeze me into their May trip to the Nürburgring. So I'm going to go there in whatever car I've got, probably the Banana, and just go and drive around for a day because I've not been there for a long, long time. It's a special place. And I thought, I've got a bit sniffy about it. Unless I'm going there in someone else's GT3 race car, I'm not going to go. What a complete twat I was. Just go there in anything you've got. Celebrate.
When is that? It's in May.
It's in May. I'll send you some dates. I might have a second pass for someone, Mr. C.
Oh, I'd love to.
I know. So
yeah, always need to be initiated.
But and to add that, Goodwood, and I'm doing the Spa 6 hours in September, and there's some other racing. But for me, it's the local track thing. I worry.
Yeah, that's a good advice.
That's a good call.
They're going to struggle. Right. The next point on the agenda is. Your bucket list driving goal. Wow. Okay. Let's start with Manish.
I've got one. It will never happen, but I do have one. I would love more than anything else to drive a Lamborghini Mura from San Agata to London. That is what I would most like to do on this planet in a car. I mean... That's a 2 million quid car now, isn't it?
Yeah.
One of the people who was there, we were chatting to him. I haven't seen him for 5 years, but I was talking to Simon Kidston, and he still has a Mura SV, hasn't
he? He does, a black car, chassis 007.
I mean, it's one of those things. You just talk to Simon, it's like, can I please borrow it? He can do that run. He'll, in a very charming way, say, not while I'm alive.
Oh, I didn't know that was an option.
You know what? That reminds me. When
so we can arrange it for you, yes.
I reckon Simon would say yes to that. He's up for that kind of stuff. When one of the greatest motoring journalism stories ever written is Mel Nichols' Convoy.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, was it Uraco Silhouette and Countach being driven back from the factory?
Yeah.
Because I'm derivative and lacking in imagination. In 2003 or 2004, I drove the first three Gallardos to come to the UK for HRO. And we drove them back we did that drive from the factory to London in these three Gallardos. It's a special to drive out of the factory thinking we're going for 1,300 miles, whatever it is. You're right, special feeling. So yeah, I agree with that. Chris Cooper, but bear in mind, actually, the one thing that I didn't stipulate is you're only allowed one. You're allowed one. Don't give us five. This was specified as one by Neil Clifford. One. That's why the finger of truth and justice.
That is a finger. It's a finger, yeah. I promise.
Yeah. It's not something else.
Is that a blistered finger?
Yeah, that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
Cheeky.
So mine, just the one.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The boys and I are racing together at Le Mans.
Oh, there you go.
And if I could have one and a bit, Monkey, it would be you as well.
Thank you very much.
And your eldest. Oh. Thank
you very much. Yeah, but there's only three seats, so Monkey.
I've seen your eldest drive, and he's pretty handy.
Lunatic. Ed would love it.
So, a couple of things. I'm going to give you one, but I'm going to...
I'm going to give you one.
First of all, I've been pretty lucky, and I've done quite a few things that, to be honest with you, if I could just do those things again, I would be super happy. And my real answer is not one I'm prepared to give, because it will make it sound like I'm a spoiled brat, but which I'm not going to do.
I got a silver spoon
in my mouth and all that stuff. I'm a spoiled brat. God.
Yeah. Rear cigarette lighters.
Anyway, but when I had an opportunity to race some historic cars, and I raced a Chevron B8, and if you race a Chevron B8 where you can win outright, there is no better racing car. It's one of those, you're normally the guys you're racing with, it's super close and super competitive. But unfortunately, in certain categories, you race in class. And there's one car that overtook you in a Chevron B8. And you just thought to yourself, I want to be in that car. And for me, I didn't want to just be in that type of car. I wanted to be in a very specific car. The car was a Lola T70 Mark III B.
Yeah.
And the car I wanted to be in was the David Piper Sandman car.
For sale.
And that car is for sale today on Fiskins.com or
.uk.
I haven't asked. I can't afford it. But one day I hope I can afford it. And I will call them up, ask for their bank details, and send the money.
It's the Condor Green.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's always been known as one of the most original. Say that again?
Approximately, what's it going for?
I'm guessing they're asking 1.5 to 2 million.
Yeah. I said two, yeah.
Yeah, it's the most original of them. And I think they kept the original body and got a replica body on it and stuff like that. But... anyway, yeah, it's just when that car overtakes you in a different class, you're like, I just want to be in that car. Yeah,
they're fantastic racing cars. They really, I mean, you need a big open circuit, but God, do they go?
Yeah,
Neil Clifford.
I really, really have to do the Mille Miglia. It's a bit obvious, and I just got to grow some balls, frankly, because I've got a car to do it in.
What would you do then, Neil?
Well, I've got a Jaguar Mark 7 that I can do it in. Yeah, I can do a Jaguar Mark 7. I had a Bristol 400, but I don't have a Bristol 400 anymore. a Jaguar Mark 7. It's pre-57 car, so that's probably the car I could do it in. And I've been offered, obviously not because I'm anyone at all, it's just the fact that I mentioned this on the podcast about 3 months ago, and Jaguar Classic offered me the ability to drive one of their cars, obviously not for free, a load of money. Like, I thought it would be expensive, but when they emailed me, I had another zero on the end. And I'm like,
they should be more generous than that.
Exactly.
I think we could probably alter that. We could alter the size of that bill, I think.
Or they would look after me in my car. And I just do have to do it because, you know, it's in Italy and I've watched a million people do it. I know a lot of people that have done it. And now it's 4 days, not three. So it's not quite as heavy. I've been there and watched it three or four times. I've seen Jackie Ickx overtake everyone and just park his little 550 Spider in the car park on his own, have a fag and go to bed. You know, I've lived and breathed it apart from actually doing it. So I need to grow some bollocks.
I think part of this bucket list idea is that no one should actually intervene or question what someone's chosen to do. I'm now going to break that rule, and you can call me a twat, Neil Clifford, but everyone that's wants to do the Mille Miglia should do the Modena Cento Ore. I really believe I've done both, and yeah. the second was just superior in every bloody way. But sadly, it's not called the Mille Miglia, so it doesn't have the romance. I know. You're quite right. You have to go with your heart. But that Modena Cento Ore event, Jesus.
Yeah. I was going to say that.
Where does it finish? What's the journey?
It's all your sort of. Where are you? I don't even know.
It's not a fixed journey. It's a road rally where they include some circuits.
But the itinerary is not as harsh. You get to do some closed stages so you can do some proper skids. And because they don't push you so long each day, you have amazing meals every night. And the Mille Miglia, when I did it, was so frantic. I could have not been in Italy. You just got up, put a mask on,
and whizzed.
Had a C-type kick the shit out of you for 14 hours, trying to sleep when you could. And then went going, and it could have been in Luton. I hardly remember being in Italy at all.
Yeah.
So Luton's like that. Yeah.
So this was bucket list, and for me, no explanation really beyond the fact that I've been lucky to do lots of things, but I would love to do them all. I just love to do them all, and it sounds awful. I'd love to do it with Mr. Cooper. I'd love to do it with lots of my racing buddies, but actually, I just want to do them all. I'd do it with two total strangers. I'd do it with two people I thought. Yeah. I just want to do it. I think every racing driver would love to have that on their CV.
Yeah.
Sadly, I'm too old, too slow, and too skinned. So I'll never
be you're one of those. You're not the first two.
No.
Classic Le Mans, though. Classic Le Mans.
I've driven the circuit. I'm so lucky. I've done Classic Le Mans. I've done the support race twice. You know, I've done a Carrera Cup race there. So I've done lots. I tell you what, it's got real rhythm, that circuit, as well. Yeah. It's a privilege to drive the lap and in something quick. I did it in an Aston Martin Vulcan as well at some support race there. Yeah. That thing was strolling along down the straights. So my teammate was Peter Dunbrecht. That was his first time back there after the bloody...
After that year.
Oh, yeah. My day.
He's a lovely chap.
He's a lovely man and very, very talented. So, but Le Mans. Failing that, Sebring, but Le Mans. Oh, you only allowed one. Okay. So you've done that one. This is a good one. Can you stop putting your penis up against the thing there?
It's a finger.
Those listening in black and white.
It's got a joint in it. Or
Neil Clifford.
It's got bones in it.
Yeah. Neil Clifford keeps showing what we're now going to call his horner, and we don't need to see it. Put it away.
Can I say, as a trainee orthopaedic surgeon, I was struggling to identify that appendage.
Can I use the phrase you used on our group was it has an amphibian quality.
it looked like some kind of salamander. I mean,
I think it was something that brought COVID into Western Europe, wasn't it, really?
No, I just remember because Chris and I left a party at the same time. You're not allowed to take phones. And I think we must simultaneously have got our signals. So 280 WhatsApps arrived. 122 of those were the bloody WhatsApps.
Right, Chris, one of these remaining subjects is going to take me about an hour, so we
okay,
need...
sorry. No, you're allowed, these are one each, you can't...
Well, one of them might be, but it's not you just, that response.
Eddie's not going to have to play by the rules. So, the first one here is, you're allowed one Merc for life. Chris Cooper.
Well, a daily. It's got to be a daily, not just one Merc. It's
yeah,
a daily.
This is your only car, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay.
Your only car.
I'd say Chris Cooper.
What is it?
CLS 63S wagon.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
Interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. Well done. Thank you.
If you're going to have one, if your daily, it's your only, you're pretty much your only car.
Mega
it's got to
car.
Do everything. It's got to do everything. 585 horsepower, 5 PS, rear-wheel drive, clear glass. That wagon, that CLS wagon body, that sport brake.
Neil Clifford doesn't like them. Neil Clifford doesn't like, look, he doesn't like them at all.
No. It's not his daily, it's my daily.
Yeah, exactly. It's not his car.
But when you go and have beans on toast with him, he's going to look at your car and say, I think that's shit.
Is your
then
favorite...
fine, and then he can say that, and then we'll have beans on toast together and talk about something else.
Okay.
Is your favorite fruit a banana?
I don't know how we got there.
A sausage is his favourite fruit.
By the way, can we accept that done well with the correct white bread and the right amount of butter, beans on toast, is an extraordinary meal.
But only if you cook the baked beans with some butter in it. No. Got to have butter in it.
That's indulgent. Anyhow, moving
brown
on.
Brown sauce?
No.
Yeah, could do.
No. You're doubling up. No, it's a tautology of food. You can't. You've already got sauce.
Yeah.
Manish, what's your Merc for life as a daily?
There is only one. It's the JR Ewing 560 SEC.
Okay.
It's just such a complete car.
Yeah.
Black, tan leather. It's got a big boot. You can get four people inside it. Old fashioned.
What in the boot?
We already talked about how much I love that cockpit. Fascia, I mean, I'm quite happily have that. In fact, probably only came as an automatic. It's the only thing I've ever driven.
Yeah, no manuals. Sierra Echo Charlie. Oh. Right. Let's. It's a different one to beat that. Neil Clifford.
S65 Coupe Cabriolet.
Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that what it was called?
No, it's just called. It's called S65 Convertible.
The V12 bi-turbo.
Yeah.
V12.
Is that one still for sale that we looked at before? It's back on the market.
$99,995. Yeah.
Yeah.
Navy blue.
Yeah. Cream.
Yeah. I would have tan. It's the only problem with that.
I agree with that. And the wheels are a bit blingy on this one, aren't they?
The baseball glove interior is the one.
Yeah. And Burmeister, heated, ventilated, massaged seats, the whole bloody thing. It's big enough for four people just, and frankly, don't care if it isn't. It's got a big enough boot for shopping. It's just a beautiful thing. V12. Lovely.
It's the new version.
It's not a bad call.
It's a new version of my car. I think that's what it is. It's a convertible.
It's all top. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's the most beautiful teardrop modern version of it. I agree.
Edward Lovett, where are you going with this?
I clearly used a similar methodology to Mr. Clifford there, because this is, you know, it's the daily car and it's really your own car. So you've got to take the Rolls-Royce approach. You can't really care what anyone else thinks. But and you want a bit of performance. I think the roof's got to come off, but also it has to have a roof because you need to be somewhat practical. Really, you need four seats. Because two seats is a bit selfish if it's your everyday car. And you need a sizable boot if you're going to go traveling or put golf clubs in or whatever you put in your boot. I've gone a bit more bling than you, Neil, because this is the last chance. This is the car.
Does it begin with an M?
I've gone for the 650 Maybach. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's going to go for the Maybach?
Who'd have thought it?
No, well, they've held their price well, haven't they? That was a discerning purchase for the first buyer.
Yeah.
What would that price be, Mr. Lovett?
£250,000,
something like that.
When you can get what Neil's quoted, which is pretty much the identical car for a fraction of the price.
Yeah, 40,000 miles. I had S63 cab as my fallback because I actually prefer the look of it. The S65 is a bit too blingy.
No, V12. Oh.
The S63 drives miles better than the 65 as well, sadly, yeah. But it isn't a V12. So, Chris, have you gone for that?
Still criticising mine. Tell me what yours is.
I'm not criticising yours. I think I said yours was great. There's no need. I won't take this kind of aggression. I'm sorry. There's no need for it. So I'm going to... Promise, whenever I have a Merc, I've said S63 about 30 times on this.
Oh, you may have done in just 55 podcasts. You're right.
Scratch record. So I'm going... You've all been a bit boring. I think this is more open to interpretation. So, I think the best looking Mercedes street car ever made is the 500 EW124. It just has stance, and its story is wonderful. But they're a bit old now. So, and yeah. I think I will do this. In fact, I'm going to make a phone call after this. I'm going to start another project because I haven't got enough ruined shit going on in my life already. I'd like one of those with an M156. 6.2 litre, kind of last of the normally aspirated 6.2 engines in it. And I think that car is something I'd drive every single day. Clear glass, sleeper, take the badge off the back, pretend that I'm Rowan Atkinson in 1991.
Yeah.
I'd want it in that really dark, boring blue with the check cloth interior, clear glass, and I would look cooler than all of you put together until I got out and people saw me.
I think that's very good. I had the E60.
Did you?
Yeah, the Tetra Pak. You know the bloke who made the orange juice cartons?
Rousing.
Who's, you know, worth like £47 billion.
Challenge Salvador.
Yeah. It was his car from new. Well, this is when they were like 17,995. Now they're like £175,000, are they? The E60.
Was it good?
Yeah, it's good, yeah. But the badge is, it's all about the badge, really.
These badges are getting expensive. SL73 at the weekend, $700,000.
Really?
Whoa.
I saw that.
Just for a badge.
No, for a spare engine for your
Honda. Yes, I need.
Okay. So here we go. Favorite wheel arches. This, and they're allowed one. Cooper, raise one finger to show that you've acknowledged that, please. For the benefit of those listening, Chris Cooper just raised two fingers at me. You can guess which one.
Chilean gesture at you.
So Chris, what would you like to have as your best wheel arches?
I mean, this is wheel arches is kind of where so much of the passion, you realize what the passion was. When you saw wheel arches aren't what they used to be. They aren't what they used to be. And it would be easy to go for something.
Just give us an answer, love.
Don't start naming all of our ones. Just name your own bloody one.
I haven't said anything yet.
Hold on.
You guys should stop drinking water and have some beer. Chill.
He's providing a romantic prologue. So, Chris, carry on, please. Carry on weeping from your...
What was that moment? What was that moment when you followed a car and I thought, gee, look at the arches on that.
Mm-hmm.
And there had to be something. They obviously changed everything about the car. And for me, it always comes back to an Audi Quattro, the original Quattro.
Yeah.
Following one, it must have been late 80s, and I was going around that weird one-way system in Guildford where it goes over the river and round and back again. And I would have had my Mini Cooper... 1967 Mini Cooper when I was a student. I got into, and there was an Audi Quattro with that stance and those blistered arches clearly stuck on rather than just the car design. That has always been for me the definitive arch. Everything about arches for me came from that. Because when I was growing up, we didn't see 2.1 turbo RSRs or whatever they were. We didn't see those kind of things in the late 80s. We didn't have the internet. Audi Quattro. We had Chevette HSRs, but they were amazing, so no, but the arch, the car.
Quattro. I think I was there. I was working, but just by Debenhams.
Yeah.
In Guildford. Yeah.
Yes.
I was a store manager in there, 87.
That would have been
I think I saw you.
Yeah. Sorry, but I should have come in, but you know, so I didn't have any money. I didn't have any money then to spend.
Neil Clifford, what's your, give us one arch, one set of arches.
You know, it's a car that I have a funny love affair with, and an annoyance, because I've had five of the bloody things, and I've had a yellow one. You can guess what it is. A yellow one.
Yes.
A red one.
It's candy Italian.
Candy red. Two Lord Blue. You know, I bought them for 10 grand and sold them for 12 and thought I was a legend, and now like £1.5 million. But it's Integrale.
Yeah.
I think even the rear, but you that car is better to look at, very controversial thing to say, better to look at than drive.
Yes, definitely.
Is a subject for another day, the better to look at than drive cars.
That's a good topic.
But to look at, it is mind-bendingly gorgeous how wide those arches are.
I'd swap mine for yours, where I'd have yours rather than mine in an instant. They're that good, those two.
Those arches. It's almost. I'm sure one of you guys are going to try and beat it, but I'm not sure it's beatable. The Integrale front arch.
Well, obviously it is, but then we'll carry on. Edward Lovett.
I'm going to go last. Thank you very much.
Oh God, here we go. Manish.
You better have a bloody good one.
Yeah, Manish, what are you going to go for?
Rear wheel arch of a Countach, and especially any of the S's where they put the little bumpers around. They just that funny going up that way, coming back round, then coming back round again, I think is unbelievable. And on any of the S's, the 400S, the 500S, the 5000, doesn't really matter. When they actually, it's one of the few times looking at that thing from the back with that extended arch and hats up. Hell of a sexy beast, I think.
Yes.
Amazing looking thing.
Yes.
So arches are separated into boxes and flares. I think there's a strong argument for both.
Yes.
My learned colleagues have both mentioned box arches. I think they are very good, but I've owned quite a few cars that have got big arches on them. And for me, the one that I always looked back at after I'd parked it was the CLK, Black Series, Mercedes. Those arches are so perfectly added on to the bodywork. It just looks so factory and so right, but so naughty. To take a vehicle that fundamentally is so uninspiring to look at and to transform it just through arches, for me, they are the greatest. Ed would love it.
Mm.
I think you've all done a very good job. You've all stayed quite modern as well.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I'm going to go modern backwards, and I'm going to put some photos up here for you. But
you're allowed one. Hang on. Whoa, listen, just stop.
You're allowed one.
No, there's some special notes here. There's some special notes here for the Morgan Aero Max. I think that's a great looking wheel arch. The 935 Moby Dick.
Yeah, yeah.
911 RSR Mary Stewart.
Yeah, we all had all of those, but didn't say that.
Alpha GTAM Auto Delta, a 300 SL Roadster. But you've got to go further back for the ultimate wheel archers. And, you know, this is Delahaye 175 Suchik Roadster. This is the Ralph Lauren Mercedes SSK Count Rossi.
Yeah.
Go and Google those two last cars.
Yeah, we don't need to Google it. We know what it is.
That era of wheel arch, wheel covers, those cars are just staggeringly beautiful. And I talked earlier on about the events and all these concourses that go on around the world. When you go and see one of these cars that's come out of a 5 or 10 year restoration from a devoted car billionaire, they are just outstanding.
Yeah.
I like it. Also, I like the interpretation of wheel arch as well, wheel cover. I think that was very good, Ed, but thank you very much. So the two car garage is now coming up. Hold on. It's on my photographs. It's by Furious GTA. I'm sure we know this person. You're a successful high-end cheesemonger living somewhere near Land's End, where you sell only the most expensive cheeses around to multimillionaires for their lavish cheese and wine parties. You acquired a new and very wealthy customer who will pay a premium for your cheesy comestibles. Bonus point if you can name where that phrase comes from. The only problem is he lives somewhere. God, what's going on there? Bugger off. I've just lost that. Hold on.
I've got it if you want me to read it.
The only problem is he lives somewhere just outside John and Groats, and he doesn't give you much notice when he's throwing one of his parties. Solve the problem of avoiding unnecessary stops at all service stations whose names sound like cheeses. You require a fast, modern, classic estate car that is quick enough to get to the other end of the country in time, but frugal enough that you won't need to make more than a couple of stops. The customer is paying you handsomely, so you also decide you will treat yourself to a brand new estate to fulfill the same task if ever the old car lets you down. Combined budget for both estates is £100,000, and everyone's going to choose an Alpina B5 estate. Oh, sorry.
No, they're not.
Okay. Which and because you are so vociferous, Chris Cooper, and you're clearly seven lagers in, you can go first.
I've had one bottle of beer. There's so much to love about this one. I just love... Comestible is an underused word.
It is, yep, it is.
Yeah. Except by you, Chris.
Well, I love it. I think it's got some alliterative loveliness about cheesy comestible. I love it. And Land's End and John O'Groats and so forth. So, and I think there's a bit of symmetry here, I think. And I think it's very important to read this one carefully. A fast, modern, classic estate car. How modern is a modern classic? I reckon late 90s, early 2000s.
Also, but can I qualify one thing? When was the first really fast estate car? They haven't been around that long.
No. It says a fast, modern, classic estate car. It doesn't say really fast. It says fast, modern, classic estate car.
Yeah.
That frugal enough so you don't need to make too many stops at the wrong kind of service station. So coming from Land's End, you'd want to get past Gordino before you had to stop.
Are you going to talk us through every aspect of this?
We've actually read it as well, just FYI.
The classic would be an E46 330 diesel touring.
Yeah, okay.
That was the car
amazing cars.
I learned how to drive a Nürburgring, one of those.
Yeah.
Gabby Rusin, who was Dirk Scheuermann's girlfriend at the time, I couldn't afford to hire Dirk. 2002, I took a couple of days, went out there in the spring before we did our race in that Caterham. I thought about a Panamera diesel V8.
It's not an estate.
But it's not an estate. But how much cheese would you need to get in it? So I think you could get in, but it's not an estate. That's why I didn't do it. So the symmetry is just in case the E46 did expire, you'd have an Alpina D3.
D3
estate. The Alpina, current model Alpina D3 estate is the spiritual grandchild of the 330 diesel touring. So I'd have two BMWs, both diesels, E46, 330 diesel touring, and an Alpina D3 S, I think, touring. That's what I get. If I was a high-end cheesemonger, under the heading of cheese and service stations, the boys and Cara and I are developing the next version or the next game for another time.
Well, like that. Well, lads, we got through it. Neil Clifford.
I obviously have read it too, but the I've slightly avoided the word classic.
Modern. You read some of it, you mean?
Yeah, I've got, the best estate you can go out and buy now is a 520 diesel BMW estate. I had one in Sicily for a week. It's just a brilliant thing. And if I don't know what it does to the gallon. I think it was a diesel. I can't believe it's a diesel, right? And just a brilliant car. And you probably do 450, 500 miles. So you're only filling up probably once from Land's End to John O'Groats. And it's got all the kit, all the loveliness. So I'd go out and buy one of those, a couple of years old, so it'd be like 40 grand or something. And then you'd have 60 grand left, and I would go and buy a B5 Alpina for myself touring, because it's just, I'm late to Alpina. I want to say the word Alpina as much as possible generally, because it's just magnificent. I drive it every morning. And I would hope that my 520 didn't break because I wouldn't want to do all the miles in my Alpina, so don't lose all the money. And that's like 60 grand. So I've exactly spent the 100 and I've got two BMW estates.
Is it frugal enough, the B5? What do you get out of yours?
25.
Yeah, I think you're allowed it. Right, with four BMWs in, Manish, how many BMWs are you going to have?
None. I'm going to bend this question a bit for the first time. First of all, you can't do more than 70 miles an hour on most of this journey. So I think the word fast is utterly...
You want to bet?
Well, I mean...
Literally, hold my beer.
This is a professional gig. If you get 12 points, okay, you lose your job. And this is a professional gig. And I think I'm... Anyway, the point is I'm only defining fast as I don't need it to do 130. So...
Yeah.
I'm going to stay at home with this one. I'm going to get an Audi A4 Avant 2-litre TDR. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to slip into this car. And now I did check this out. It's a 70-litre fuel tank. And you're not going to believe the mileage on that. They say it's 13.8 kilometres per litre, giving you a range of 966 kilometres.
So you must have filled your car once every 2 years.
Say that again?
You must have filled your own car once every 2 years.
That, you know, but that is pretty, I think that's pretty spectacular.
It is quite impressive, yeah.
Why are we suddenly working in litres and kilometres?
You can do about 600 miles in this.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So you don't actually need to fill up. You fill up when you get there, you fill up again when you come back. But then also for the second part, I don't want a new car and I don't want an estate. Actually, I want something that looks like a kind of estate, but is actually a cool car and could make that journey and make it really comfortably. And I would spend all the rest of the money I had on what I think is kind of the pre-estate. It's the most beautiful car. And it is, I'd buy a Citroen SM. I'd spend as much money because it's a cheese car. It looks like a cheese car.
It does look like a piece of cheese. I think
it's not an estate car.
It's a hatchback.
It's a hatchback.
It's cheese. I was wondering if you had that picture.
I think it's a cheese car. It is a cheese car. And that's what I mean. I'm going to bend it for once. And I feel, can you just imagine with the self-leveling suspension, all the rest of that, the gentle waft of Roquefort filling the cabin.
Oh, if you bring smelly cheese back from France and it gets into the roof lining of your car, done. It's written off. Let's go for Edward Lovett.
Well, Manish, as a marketeer, I'm not a marketeer, but if you were a marketeer and you're speeding, I think actually, if you got done doing 158 miles an hour up the M1 on your way to John O'Groats, you could be on the cheese and you could have your brand on the front page of the Daily Mail. Cheese legend.
Evening.
Exactly, gets caught. And your business would skyrocket overnight. Chris, can you hold that photo up you've got there of the cheese? So I haven't taken the interpretation of modern. So my first choice, which is my not new car, which looks a bit like that picture, because when I think cheese, I think yellow, is going to be the ex-Sultan of Brunei Bentley estate car in bright yellow. Because that does look like a block of cheddar or something like that.
Yep.
How much does that cost?
Well, that's a good question. And I was thinking, I don't know how much change I've
got. You haven't got much change.
I don't have much change.
Yeah, but Edward's a motor trader, so he's going to get it at a discounted price.
Yeah. As I don't have much change left, I'm going to go back and buy that old B5 that's probably still at BMW Bristol. We're still waiting for a supercharger on back order.
It's a good. I like the idea of that. In my early musings, I had an XJS Aventa.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I think as a cheese man, you've got to be somewhat eccentric, haven't you? So you've got to have a car to.
Is it the Val d'Isère you're getting?
Is that what it? That's the Val d'Isère, the bright yellow one. Yeah.
What have you got left? I reckon you've got a 10 grand left if we're being charitable.
I'll just put something on the Never Never. 520D on the Never Never.
520D on the tick, please, mate. So these are rather good. Not a bit shows you a lot. So Audi makes the best fast estate cars in the world, they think, and no one's choosing them. I don't think I'm going to alter that. So I think we've not interpreted what an estate car is correctly. For me, it doesn't have to be called an estate car. It needs to have a lift back that is nearer the vertical than the 45. Do we agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in other words, if it's there to there, it's a hatchback, but there to there, it's an estate car.
Okay.
By that classification, the BMW M Coupe is the original one, is an estate car, and it would be an ideal cheese carrier.
ZM.
Yeah, the Z3M Coupe.
Z3M, yeah.
The clown shoe. I've just chosen it because I absolutely adore them. I want to own one. I think it's one of the coolest looking cars ever made, and I would love to try and drive cheese in it. It would be an utter disaster. I think it would go wrong, and therefore my fallback, the uncommon Alpina D3, which everyone else has chosen, because you have to have that, would probably be used quite a lot. But my rich friend would always go, ooh, could you bring some real smelly stuff in the M Coupe, and I'd turn up in that. Okay?
Yeah, I like that.
Otherwise, you'd have an E61 M5 with a bag tank in it. Because, friends, let's remember that range isn't a corollary of economy. It's also how much fuel you've got on board. So stick a 100-litre tank in anything and you'll be fine. Now, let's move on to some music. This has gone on a long time, this podcast. Where are we? Yes, music. Manish, give us some music.
I think I'm still getting over last week. And I feel a slightly more optimistic version of last week's music choices. Demis Roussos's Forever and Ever and Ever. I'll be your name.
As I walked through the Red Bull garage, I was waiting for someone to hit me with a spanner, if I'm honest with you, but they didn't, which just proves they don't give a shit and don't listen to our podcast.
They didn't give a shit, you're right.
And then I walked through going, oh, I'm horny, 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 horny. Okay. Edward Lovett, what's your music going to be?
I've gone for The Cardigans.
Yeah.
My Favourite Game.
Nice one, I like that. Yeah.
Chris Cooper.
A bit like Manish. I quite like Billy Joel, An Innocent Man.
Oh, Billy Joel.
But my choice is... this has been going through my head this week.
Oh, my God.
Nickelback, I Want to Be a Rock Star. I love that. Great video.
It's an extraordinary performance, this. Neil Clifford.
I've behaved really well before now.
You have. Thank you.
This is nothing to do with the last week's subject of music, but it's a brilliant song. The Jam Butterfly Collector.
Oh, massive song. Oh,
you should and Google the lyrics. It's it's very good.
So I've listened to lots of music over the last few days, and one tune came on my brilliant Focal Bathys headphones, which are those Bluetooth ones. I freaking love them. I paid full price for them. They don't give me any money for that. It's Cola by Camel Fat. It's a knockout tune. Go and listen to that. It's a really, really good tune.
Knockout.
Cola by Camel Fat.
Camel Fat. Camel Fat is spelled P-H-A-T.
Oh, like that. Oh.
Yes. Electronic dance music. And nice. Good too.
As in roll another fat one, that kind of fat.
Yeah, brother. Let's end that podcast there before the effects of Mr. Cooper's fourth beer take hold. Thank you very much for joining us. We look forward to connecting with you again for episode 56 next week. That was, for those watching, Neil Clifford's penis.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.